heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, when you started seeing some of the tweets coming over about Baltimore in Representative Cummins, a lot of people were like aghast immediately, thinking, what is President Donald Trump up to now? And why would he be going after Cummins in such a way? As you look a little further at this story, friends, and it is burning up the airwaves from coast to coast, it really comes down to the fact that you have to admit Donald Trump, if anything, he is a brilliant strategist. I mean, I don't really want to call him a politician specifically because he didn't really live his life as a politician. In fact, he's not really a politician at all. He's kind of anti-politician, I guess, in a weird sort of way, which is really what has a lot of people unsettled. They're in cardiac arrest a bit. And that's all sides of the aisle because they don't know what to make of it. And of course, a lot of the media heads and others like, what is he doing with Cummins? That's racist. The man is racist. And of course, they all start with the racist comments. And you know what's coming, people. You know what's coming. But let's get back to Trump as the strategist, as the tweets were coming out here about Representative Cummins. Now, on its face, there's nothing he said that was racist about Representative Cummins. In fact, Donald Trump goes after everybody. I don't think he sees the color before he goes after them. I don't think that matters to the man, quite frankly. I mean, he's insulted Blasio plenty of times. And he certainly isn't a black American. He's a white American. He's a doofball too, but that's beside the point. The one common denominator that President Trump goes after, he goes after idiots. And he does it consistently, people. In fact, I'm going to say to you, Donald Trump isn't a racist. He's an idiotist. He doesn't like idiots. That's what that means. So he's an idiotist, yeah. I mean, you can call him that, I think. Now, he's not the idiot. He's brilliant. I mean, he's a brilliant strategist. Now, some people may think he's an idiot. At one point, I always wondered and questioned what his Twitter feed was for. But, you know, if you're going to play politics and you're going to start to drain a swamp a little bit, or any of this kind of, you know, you start talking swamp stuff, swamp talk, you know, when you're doing that, people, you've got to be a strategist. In other words, how do you outsmart the wolf? How do you outsmart the fox? How do you outsmart these conniving politicians, you see? You can only do that if you're one step ahead. Now, you know, we've all been Mueller'd out. We've been Russia collusioned out. It just is an endless game that's coming. And now it's investigation after investigation. And what the left is after is they're after an aha moment, something that they can reveal. They want to do a sort of a Vanna White trick on Donald Trump. And they want to do it as close to the 2020 election as they can. Because you see, if you can leave that lasting impression in Americans' minds, maybe, just maybe, they'll forget anything good the president has done, and that will give them the impetus they need to, you know, to skate into office in 2020 and take it back and begin to undo a lot of conservatism in the country, clearly, and bring more of their left attitudes in, their socialist attitudes, and things that are very clear. Now, that's. I'm not being funny, and that's not propaganda, and you know, it's just all true. It's almost impossible to think in the terms that we're having these conversations today, people. When you see there are 20-some-odd candidates and they're all socialist, you just can't even fathom the thought that we're having this conversation, and yet we are. I mean, the alternatives to this president is not attractive at all. And a lot of the underlying thing I want to talk to you about today is conservatism versus liberal tendencies. And it certainly comes back to a lot of our urban cities, our towns and communities. You know, they always used to say local politics, a lot of that is Democrat run. And we're seeing that in a lot of these urban markets. Now, I've been talking to you for some time now about the decay of America's cities. I didn't need Baltimore on the radar screen to be able to have a conversation with you about the decline of America. I've been having this conversation with you for some time now. It's not a surprise, not a surprise to me. America's cities are they're terrible. They're horrendous. They're disgusting. They're decay. Yeah, they're a mess. It's not just Baltimore. Any of the America's cities, from coast to coast, all of our great cities, they're in disrepair. You know, people, we, and a term I'm going to say to you up front here, and this is sadder than sad, but America is being gutted out from the inside out. We're being gutted out. And it's happening in our cities. And as far as international players, which we've been talking about with you, and players like China and Russia, they're just loving this. Because the more they can keep America fighting with America, the better it is for them. You see, so they're just sitting back loving all this. This just plays right into their hands. Perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. And the fact, the more they keep sending the drugs over, I just having that conversation with you, the better off they are. They can keep America on drugs. If you can keep open borders and keep the drugs coming in, a lot of these drugs are coming in from China. That's a beautiful thing, people. But I digress, right? Wow. And so America's cities are in trouble. And as I start to look at the list now, America's cities are run by liberal politicians. Let's be clear. And let me give you an example. Now, these are markets that haven't had a Republican mayor in a lot of years. Washington, D.C., 109 years. Detroit, 57. San Francisco, 55. Oakland, California, 58. Flint, Michigan, remember that with all the water stuff out there? 44. Cleveland, 30. Hartford, Connecticut, 48. Chicago, Illinois, good old Chicago, 88 years. Los Angeles, 18. Atlanta, 140. St. Louis, 70. Philadelphia, 67. Baltimore, 53. Every city I just mentioned to you is a rat-infested hole. They're depressed. They're not environments that are conducive to raising a family. This isn't a black and white conversation, people. This is a left and right conversation, people. It's not a black and white. This has nothing to do with racism. This has everything to do with crappy politics. This has to do with liberal policies that are not working. Wake up. Just look at the numbers here. You know, Investors Business Daily came out and said, and I quote, "When Democrats are in control, cities tend to go soft on crime. They reward cronies and public funds. They establish hostile business environments, heavily tax the most productive citizens, and set up fat pensions for their union friends. Simply put, there is a blue state blueprint for disaster." That's what they call it. Amazing. Wow. And so, as they continue to and try to investigate and find something about this president, because they don't like the shift of the country in the fact that it's gone more conservative, and they want to bring more of their liberal, socialist, radical, democratic policies back to the forefront. Because you see, back to these adjectives that Investors pointed out, if you're going to reward the cronies, be soft on crime and get, you know, take care of your union friends and heavily tax them. And I love the way that's said, by the way. Heavily tax the most productive citizens. Don't you just love that? I mean, that's a great way to say back when they say, well, the people who have something are supposed to do more. Give us more. We want more blood from the people who are productive. So the other people can sit in their fat, rat-infested, rewarding the cronies, public fund-driven, crime-driven, hostile environments. Cummins doesn't like President Trump. he doesn't like President Trump because Representative Cummins, Elijah Cummins, he's a far left radical. He doesn't like conservatism. He wants these liberal policies. He wants to do all the things that Investors Business Daily pointed out. It's very clear. Now, he's been going after the Trump administration. He's been very vocal in a lot of these congressional hearings. And Elijah's a very important guy. He's called a civil rights leader. But yet, he uses racism as they all do. That's the go-to source that the Democrat Party uses consistently. You can just set your entire agenda, people, to the racism conversation. When it doesn't go right, when it doesn't fit their narrative, it's racism. Wow. So President Trump, he puts a tweet out. He says, if racist Elijah Cummins would focus more of his energy on helping the good people of his district and Baltimore itself, perhaps progress could be made in fixing the mess that he has helped create over many years of incompetent leadership. His radical oversight is a joke. Now, the president's calling it what it is, people. Now, everybody took these tweets and they called him as racist. Now, he's calling Elijah Cummins a racist. And quite frankly, people, Elijah Cummins is a racist. I mean, he is a racist. The Democrat Party is full of racists. In fact, they're great friends and saddle up really well with the KKK. They've hijacked the Black American communities many, many years ago. And so that tweet, well, you would say his tweets have gone viral, I guess would be a good way to put it, right? He comes with another follow-up tweet. There is nothing racist in stating plainly what most people already know, that Elijah Cummins has done a terrible job for the people of his district and of Baltimore itself. Democrats always play the race card when they are unable to win with facts. Shame. Now, that's a hell of a tweet, again. And there really wasn't anything racist the president said. But the concept or the idea that he went after a community with a Black politician, or a community that has a lot of Black representation, or a community that is in such disrepair and that has no quality of life there, and that their own mayor, their own Black American mayor said, it smells like rats, smells like dead animals, looks like trash, is horrible looking. Their own mayor. And by the way, the last three mayors have all left their office in disgrace. The whole city council, the whole apparatus structure of Baltimore is in the toilet. The president followed up with another tweet. Baltimore, under the leadership of Elijah Cummins, has the worst crime statistics in the nation. 25 years of all talk, no action. So tired of listening to the same old bull. Next, Reverend Al will show up to complain in protest. Nothing will get done for the people in need. Sad. And of course, the president has had a lot to say about this. The one thing this president does when he hits the gas, he doesn't step off the gas, people. He accelerates like hell. He'd been a hell of a NASCAR driver, I'll tell you. He'd have won a lot. Because, see, when in NASCAR, when you accelerate, you can never hesitate. You can't wink. You can't twinge. You can't. You've got to hit the gas, Pete, and you've got to continue to accelerate. He'd have been a star player as an NASCAR driver, no question about it. No hesitation whatsoever. He goes on and says, crazy Bernie Sanders recently equated the city of Baltimore to a third world country. Based on that statement, I assume that Bernie must now be labeled a racist, just as a Republican would if he used the term in standard. The fact is, Baltimore can be brought back, maybe, even to the new heights of success and glory, but not with King Elijah and that crew. When the leaders of Baltimore want to see the city rise again, I'm in a very beautiful oval-shaped office waiting for your call. And that is where we start, people. Racism in America, it is a card that plays out as a true test of time. It's a test of ideologies. It's a test and a lack of leadership and political leadership in this country. And it's sadder than sad, and nothing ever gets done. But again, this fight of good and evil that exists in our country, and again, it's a liberal, socialist, radical policies versus a road and path forward of conservatism in our country. There are choices here. There are paths we must choose where we go exactly. But you know, this whole racist conversation, after a while, you just want to vomit from all of it. Why can't they have an intellectual conversation about something that really matters to the people here? That is really the question you need to ask yourself. And you got to look beyond all the rhetoric and all the BS people and look to see where the truth is. We'll do that today on The Voice of the Nation.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So the president comes back and he says, I've received more phone calls than I think on any other subject of people from Baltimore and other cities corruptly run by Democrats thanking me for getting involved. This is what he was telling reporters outside the White House. And by the way, no matter what your view or thoughts about it are on, let me say this much. President Trump has already done a great deal for Baltimore, because here's the thing right now, people. In the last several days, and certainly in the last week or two, the president has done more for Baltimore in bringing up the plight of that once great city, who hopefully will be great again. And he's done it where no other politician or no other person could have done that. He's now put it front and center. And now the people are talking about it. And the people in Baltimore are talking about it. And the people in D.C. are talking about it. And they're talking about it in other cities. And they're talking about it from coast to coast. People are talking about Baltimore at the water cooler. It's now in the discussion points, clearly. And that's the thing about this. So let's have this conversation today. And I want to talk on a bigger scale here of the projection of these cities and conservatism versus this liberal, radical, socialist tendencies or attitude. And let's start here. I want to start immediately here with Ilana Friedman. And Ilana, everybody knows, is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host here on America Out Loud. Her newest book, Hamas, The Story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's Front Lines, can be found on Amazon and on the America Out Loud bookstore. Ilana, I know you've got also an article up on the platform, When in Doubt, Yell Racism. You and I have talked about racism. Was there anything racist in your mind about the tweet that was sent out about Representative Cummins, but more specifically about calling him on the carpet and telling him to get off his ass and do something about Baltimore?
There was nothing, absolutely nothing racist about his comment. The only black and brown things he was referring to were rats, and they are in Baltimore in plenty. The pictures of the garbage and the used hypodermic needles and the absolute disgusting state of some of Baltimore's neighborhoods were just beyond. There are no words to describe it. They were disgusting, and he was absolutely right to call Baltimore for it, and absolutely right to call Cummings on the carpet, because in the last 23 years that he's been congressman, he has done absolutely nothing to change this situation.
Yeah, you know something, I got to share with you ladies, and let me also bring on here Susan Price, and then I want to tell you about this tweet, and then I'll introduce you to somebody new here on the platform. Susan Price is an investigative researcher, a patriot, a veteran advocate, and Gold Star mother. She's a columnist and contributor here at America Out Loud. Susan, one of the most interesting tweets I have here that I got to share with everybody, and this, to me, this is a classic. This should win a prize or an award of some sort. But it says here, the tweet, Baltimore's numbers are the worst in the United States on crime and the economy. Now, people, this is true. I've been reporting before this came up about Baltimore being a problem. I talked to you about Baltimore last month and the month before that and the month before that. And I told you Baltimore has more crime in Baltimore than Chicago. And that's saying some. Okay, so what the president puts out there in the tweet is absolutely true. So here we go again. Baltimore's numbers are the worst in the United States on crime and the economy. Billions of dollars have been pumped in over the years, but to no avail. The money was stolen or wasted. Also true, people. The corruptness in Baltimore is unimaginable. The corruption and the politicians who have to leave office in disgrace is unimaginable. He finishes that tweet and says this, and this is the classic. Ask Elijah Cummings where it went. He should investigate himself with his oversight committee. I just love that tweet. Susan Price, that is a classic tweet, because what he did in that one tweet, it's amazing what you can do in less than 280 characters, but what he did in that tweet, he talked about the crime and the economy, which are factual, the money that's been pumped in from the feds but has not done a darn thing, the corruption, the money, the stolen, the waste, absolutely. Elijah Cummings, who's a representative there forever, hasn't done anything, and nor has anyone else, and that he's in head of the oversight committee trying to go after Trump for something that doesn't exist. It's a classic, isn't it?
Malcolm, there's more to this story than meets the eye. I just want to mention, Elijah Cummings is best friends with Al Sharpton. And as we all know, Al Sharpton paid many, many visits to the prior administration of the Obama administration. Now, what a lot of people don't know, child trafficking is one of the highest, probably the highest crime, and Trump's snuffing that out. And there's talk on the street that that's really one of the things Trump meant about the rats involved with this. And there's a lot of indictments also for those involved with child trafficking out of Baltimore. And so perhaps the real rats on the street, the animal rats, and that whole disarray is a cover-up for the other crimes, the black op crimes that were taking place. So it's all going to come out in the wash soon enough. The Twitter, Facebook, social media is going wild. And there's so many black Americans asking everybody, why are you voting for people like this? He hasn't done a thing for us black folks. Mm-hmm. So things are about to get interesting very, very soon.
Well, because at the end of the day, Susan, it's not a stretch to understand that they're no different. Black America is no different than Asian America, Hispanic America, White America, or anything else, any other America for that matter. You bring up a very fascinating point with the trafficking, and that's another thing I've been hot on in sharing with people throughout the country. Is trafficking. We have more, listen to the statement, people. We got some problems here. We have more human trafficking in the United States of America than any other country in the world. So now people, when I make that statement, they usually give an aghast back, like, you got to be kidding. No, I'm not kidding. We have more human trafficking here than anywhere. So as Susan rightfully points out, Baltimore, it's happening in Miami and New York and Dallas. Yes. It's happening to all of our great cities all throughout California. It's a mess. Thrilled to bring on here for the first time on the program, Alyssa Algren. She's a political commentator and columnist at Alpha News in Minnesota. She works as an analyst in corporate finance, and she focuses on a lot of these current events and politics. And she's a strong advocate for the conservative movement, which is really what we're talking about today here, people. Alyssa, you wrote a stunning column. I love your style. And it says here, the democratic destruction of America's cities. So you picked up on it and you went right there and talked about Representative Elijah Cummins and pointing out the crime-stricken, poverty-ridden, rat-infested areas of the city of Baltimore. Opine to me and tell people how bad it really is in Baltimore, please.
Well, when you have PBS do a documentary solely on Baltimore's rat problem last year, you can pretty much tell there's a huge issue if you can do an entire film about it. Baltimore, like you stated before, exceeded Chicago's homicide rate. They are in huge poverty. The opioid problem is massive. Syringes on the street, in tune to what's happening in San Francisco with their syringe problem and homelessness, and the population and the residents of Baltimore. This isn't anything new. What President Trump pointed out is not new. This has been echoed by Obama, by Bernie Sanders. This is something that has been a known fact. And the only time it's became an issue of race is because of the man who said it, the man who holds office.
That's it, Alyssa. So well said. And because what they're doing, Alyssa, is they have to continue to paint President Trump, as you know, as a racist. That's been their whole modus operandi, right? Is he's a racist, right? And it's been constant. It's been a constant drumbeat from the moment he steps into the office, even before then, through the campaign, of course. He was planned as a racist. But, you know, there's a whole reality to that. And here's the trickery for America. When you keep beating the drum, like all of the media incessantly beats to the same drum, as you know. And when you keep pointing something out, see, what? Here's the worry. Here's the scary part. And tell me, Alyssa, if this bothers you or scares you. But here's what I'm worried about. If you keep doing it as they're doing it, when the entire media is in cahoots with each other and the far left radical movement, and if you keep doing this and you put this message out there day in and day after, week out and week after, month in and month after, eventually people start to believe it, don't they?
I think it goes both ways. Yes, you are correct. I think people do start to believe it. I have met people who find out I'm conservative and are genuinely shocked that I'm not racist. And so you have half the country who is starting to believe that the other side of the aisle does hold racial animus towards minorities. And then you have another half of America who's losing all semblance of what racism and racist actually means, who are so sick of it. And the term is becoming so watered down and meaningless that we have absolutely no reaction when we hear the word, which is really sad.
When you just said, as a conservative, that you're pointed out that you're not a racist, explain that then. And why do you have to defend yourself, Alyssa?
Well, it just goes to show you that what I find is that a lot of the people on the left that I encounter, you know, they're headliners. They look at the headline and that's about it. That's the extent of their research. And so obviously there's a certain narrative in this country that Republicans, conservatives are inherently racist, whether they know it or not. And when you start to get to know someone on a personal level, so through conversation, it kind of changes the game. Like, you're not a headline, you're not a statistic, you're not a group. You're an individual talking to another individual. So that's easier to penetrate this narrative of, you know, Republicans are racist when you're talking face to face with someone and you're talking about the issues. And I've gotten a lot where people just say, you know what, I understand. I may not agree, but I understand. And I know it's not coming out of a place of bigotry, which it is sad that we have to get to that point where I have to defend myself over an accusation that is far, far from true and has no evidentiary basis to it.
Just as the president has to, correct?
Yes, correct.
The same thing.
Every day.
And let's tell folks, you're a millennial. I mean, you're a millennial conservative, correct?
Yes, I'm 26 years old.
You're in your late, right, you're in your 20s. So, I mean, perfect, yeah. Ilana, the point that Alyssa is pointing out here, it really should irritate a lot of people, the fact that conservatives are painted as racist. But to go further with that is to how we've allowed that to happen in our narrative. And why is it, Ilana, and I don't know that you can answer this, but why is it the left are so good at painting these sort of broad brush strokes, if you will? They're so good at it. And you know, the other thing, Ilana, is they never let up. They fight all the way through, whereas the right, they give up on a moment's notice. They don't put the fight forward. Why?
Well, I think part of the reason is that they are very selective about what information they are willing to receive. I had a conversation with a friend in California the other night, and she wanted to know how it was possible that someone such as myself, whatever that means, could possibly align myself with a white supremacist, meaning the president. And honestly, I was stunned. How do you continue a conversation that begins that way when all the red lights are flashing? Now, I know about this person that she considers herself well-informed because she watches CNN, and that's a balanced news reporting. Oh my gosh. Well, she doesn't know the half of it. She doesn't know anything, and she refuses to inform herself. And I think that generally speaking, that is a very big part of the problem. These people turn out all the things they don't want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ilana, you just said a couple of really cool things there. She's being brainwashed. It's an appropriate conversation. But then Alyssa points out something important that I want to continue on with. And I think this is important. And it's funny how Alyssa just mentioned this, because I talked about this just this past week. I was hot on this with listeners. And they'll know when I say this just now, is that, you know, many people, like a lot of people, like a whole bunch of Americans, really, like, I mean, coast to coast, they're only basically reading the headlines. They're lucky if they get through the first few sentences of a particular story, an article, a column, some sort of editorial. They don't read it in its entirety, and they're not really understanding the facts to get into, as Alyssa just eloquently said, they're not understanding what the facts are of that conversation. So then how do you have a reasonable, educated conversation? And then on top of that, you're watching the crazy left radical socialist network. How could you possibly? And then the takeaway from that, Ilana, is this friend of yours, a so-called friend, she comes out and say, well, how could you be liking a white supremacist? I mean, the man has done more for the minority communities than anybody has in our lifetimes, for heaven's sakes. I don't see where, I mean, he could be a lot of things. He can be a jackass, Ilana. He can be a loudmouth. He can be obnoxious. He can be a lot of stuff. But a racist, where do you get the racist part? I mean, he goes after everybody. He doesn't care if you're white, black, blue, female, male, rich, poor, got your head up your backside. Doesn't matter to Trump.
One of the things that has happened is that the Democrats have taken identity politics and totally perverted it. If it isn't perverted at the onset, it certainly has been perverted by their activities. I think Greg Gutfeld put it very nicely. He said, and I quote, "Trump's about to execute a white supremacist while trying to free a black rapper from jail as he pushes prison reforms that directly benefit families of black men while calling out a city where minorities are victims of crime and blight. If Trump's a racist, he sucks at it."
Yeah, I seen that tweet, my little friend. Ilana, thank you for bringing that up. That is an amazing comment and tweet to put out here. That's Greg Gutfeld said that. You're exactly right. And that's my point. He's doing a horrible job if he is a racist. I mean, he doesn't, you know what it is with Trump? He doesn't like malarkey. He doesn't like baloney. He doesn't like idiots. I said he's an idiotist. He doesn't like, he's not a racist. He's an idiotist. He doesn't like idiots, Ilana. Come on. Let's call it what it is. He has no patience for idiots, honey, at all. He doesn't care. He doesn't like them, you know? I mean, We could do a Dr. Seuss poem on this topic. You know that. Easy. Right? I mean, really, though. You know, we could do an easily Dr. Seuss poem on this thing. Susan, but the bigger problem is that Alyssa points out I'm really concerned with, and that Ilana doubles down on, and that I go to you with now, is that people are not being informed. Clearly, if you listen to what Alyssa and Ilana just put out there, I mean, as really both intellects and educated people who understand where all this fit, I mean, people are not reading into these, because how could they come away with the conclusions that they come away with if they don't really understand the argument? They're being brainwashed, Susan.
The thing is, Malcolm, a lot of the people in America are drinking too much of the Kool-Aid, the programming. They work their 9-to-5 jobs. They come home, they're couch potatoes, and they don't interact with their intellect past that. You know, it's just, they're caught up in the daily.
Well, people have lives to live. I mean, people have lives to live, you know, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, there's a lot of ostrich syndrome going on. And, you know, and let's not forget, radicals love to fight. And a lot of the Democrats are radicals. So, you know, they know how to fight. They use the media and programming to program the minds further of our everyday Americans. You know,
they just
are lazy. A lot are lazy.
Well, so they may be, but here's the thing. Why don't the conservatives like to fight? Why aren't they on the front lines giving a bang? Because, you know, as I said the other day, and I don't say this gleefully, people, you know, one of the things growing up as a young boy, I was taught, and I still today, is to take the high road. I always talk about the high road in life. It's better we take the high road. And it's just a better principle-driven attitude to have in life. And I proud myself on always having taken the high road. But here's the thing, people. When we're talking about the kinds of things we're talking about right now, and we're discussing the future of our country, I don't think the high road is going to work anymore, people. I think if you're going to have a gutter fight, you got to bring the right weaponry to the fight, first of all. And you're going to be willing to get into the gutter and have that fight. And I think this is part and parcel the biggest problem of why the conservative movement has rolled over and played dead. And as I pointed out to you before, not only are they not running our urban cities and markets and towns and local politics, not only have they given that all up to the far left radicals, but they also have given up all the social media outlets the far left runs, all of the newspapers in America the far left runs, all of the television stations in America, the networks the far left runs, the education, the university centers the far left runs. My friends, I'll tell you what, it's time to do some math, some basic math here, and call it out for what it is. Where are the conservatives in this fight?
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut. Not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. I don't know where the right is in this fight. Alyssa, I want to ask you straight out here. I think there's a point in time where we have to call it out for what it is. And what I say, let's do some simple basic math. But as I just pointed out before the break, the far left movement in this country are running all of the media outlets and all of the propaganda tools and all of the educational aspects of our kids, and they're running all of our urban cities and markets as well. Why is that, in your opinion? Why has that happened, and why are they winning that fight?
Well, politics has basically been completely overrun by the culture, and the culture, as we know, gets more and more progressive as we become more secular. We feel that we are the moral arbiters. We don't have a higher purpose. So it becomes the whole mentality of whatever drives my individual happiness is what drives my decisions and what drives my ideology. And that really gets to a more progressive outlook on politics, culture, and that's what we see in, you know, like you said, the left has all the major institutions. They have Hollywood, the media, and okay. the education system. And that's trickling down into, obviously, our youth. Millennials are definitely, I hate to say it, but a lost cause when it comes to conservatism. I have more hope for Gen Z, as they are proving to be a little more of a pushback to millennials. But it is an epidemic, and it's hard when, especially when the left has control of the media. You can't just go on Google and get unbiased search results. The top 100 search right. results will have CNN, Vox, MSNBC, Politico, Atlantic, CNBC, Washington Post, all of these far left media publications are the top search results. So how do you weed through that is one of the toughest challenges we have in the movement.
If that's all true, then I think we should warn people right now that it's going to get worse before it gets better.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. You just pointed it out very well. Because now as this generation dies off and as the baby boomers and the seniors, you know, as they die, what's happening is left. You just said you have no hope for the millennials in play and what's happening with the generation that's now coming into decision-making process. So what you're saying is we're the country, if you think it's bad now, it's going to get worse, Malcolm. And then after that, so it's going to get worse. And then your hope is back to Generation X, Y, and Z after that, huh?
Yeah, it's unless we have this awakening, I don't see how it's just so polarized. We are very, right. we're leaning back on right. party loyalty and ideological tribalism. That's mm-hmm. disgusting.
People are really, a lot of people are just interested in their happiness at that moment of time, not thinking about really the bigger fight of good versus evil, are they?
Exactly. Exactly. It's yeah. momentary and short-term happiness that we strive for and is mm-hmm. the focal point of our lives.
You know, that makes us on the call here, us four here, Susan, Ilana, Alyssa, Malcolm, that makes us four a special breed, you know, because mm-hmm. we passionately care. And so we care about what's ahead. We can tell, you can tell by the remarks. And I bet a lot of our listeners would fall into our camp as well. Here's the challenge. I say to everybody, we've got to invite our Democrat friends in. Back to that lady, Ilana, you were just talking about the misfit friend of yours who says that, you know, Trump is a white supremacist. Why don't you invite that misfit friend of yours onto the program? He had to listen to some real talk here, maybe. What do you think?
She would not come. She doesn't want to listen. You know, and this is the problem. She does not want to listen. And what is very terrifying to me is that for 30 or 40 years, she was a teacher. And how do you teach kids to learn what they need to learn when you don't want to learn? This is terrifying to me. We have, when I see a conservative millennial, I think, my gosh, what courage, what intellect this person must have, because he or she is a product of the educational system that deprived them of traditional educational values. They've replaced the study of history and literature and even English language, grammar. The English that I hear on the media is just atrocious. And the tools that they need for critical thinking, they don't teach them anymore. They replace them with gender identity or misidentity. Mm-hmm. I mean, the things they're learning in school are so appalling.
It's outrageous. Yeah, it's outrageous.
Because they they have replaced all of the basic educational concepts that our kids need in order to face the world. Yeah. And so they create an environment that is friendly to them, even though it's not realistic. They want safe spaces. They want, you know, this is all, and the Black community that is involved in this activity has resegregated themselves. And that to me is also appalling. This whole movement away from reality is going to come home to roost any day now.
That says a lot what you just said there. So far from reality. And then you think, what really is reality anymore? And the problem is, here's the problem with what you say, Ilana. Perception is reality. Now, what I mentioned moments ago to Alyssa about calling Trump a racist all the time, okay? That perception becomes people's reality, you see? And then back to what you're saying about the entire system, and it really does become, the perception becomes reality. Now, let's shift this conversation slightly to try to understand. Alyssa, you just said a moment ago something, and I want to go around the table here with everybody. You just said about, well, the only way this would change, Malcolm, is if we can change, change the trajectory of what is happening right now. Means, because I asked you the question, are we doomed? You said, well, sadly, we are, Malcolm, right now, because the situation you drew out about what was happening with the millennials versus the baby boomers versus the XYZ would say we're in trouble. And a lot of that comes back to what Ilana is saying about the education system and our mass media and the culture out there, as you say. Having said all that, how do we turn the corner here? How do we, other than programs like ours and conversations like ours and columnists like all three of you are brilliant writers, the three of you women on the call right now, Alyssa, Ilana, and Susan, are brilliant writers, great thinkers, thinkers of our time, people who can look at something and make sense of it. So, Susan, let me start with you and say this. How can we change? We just can't wait for it to happen, Susan, number one. But how do we change this thinking in the country back to some other form of reality that Ilana has just pointed out? What do you think?
Well, Malcolm, this agenda that started seeding itself after Operation Paperclip and was hidden in the shadows for years, working in the deep state departments of government, and then grew through technology and social media to bring us to the point we're at now. Listen, the silent majority, and I know we're not just talking about Trump, but he was the one that helped bring us out of this and away from the abomination of the Clinton-Bush cabal. And people are starting to awaken now. They're starting to take a second look. And there are so many grassroots clubs and developments of church groups and organizations. There are Democrat conservatives, believe it or not. There are those that don't know who they are but want their children to be protected and want to live in an American country, not somebody taken over by those crossing our borders illegally. So they are starting to listen and come to the table. So we're reaching out and inviting them into groups and clubs and taking that grassroots approach, but also educating our kids at home. The schools, more homeschooling is becoming very popular.
It is.
And there's a lot of things on the rise again. Old-fashioned family dinner tactical approaches now are seeding again.
Let me bridge over to Alyssa and ask you. Alyssa, I'd like your opinion on what Susan puts out there. She sounds for a moment like she's a bit optimistic about, again, when we talk about grassroots effort of where it starts or how do we make this shift happen in our society. She sounds very optimistic and clearly has a thought process and strategy to make it happen. Do you buy any of that, Alyssa?
Oh, absolutely. And when I say that, I don't mean we're doomed in the sense that basically we're just spiraling into the end of the world. It's just, my point was, once you go radical and go progressive, historically what we've seen. It's very hard to go back, but it's possible. And I think that the conservative movement is gaining traction, especially among the young generation. Even though we think it's lost, there is a silent majority, not so much conservatism, but more anti-progressivism, which is a strong movement. It's basically the counterculture of the radical left that says, that's very anti-science, that says we need open borders. And most of Americans aren't on board with that. And as far as grassroots alternative media, it's springing up more than we've ever seen it.
Yep.
And the pushback is real and it's gaining traction. And I think a lot more people that are just center left, moderate or center right are getting on board. And I do have hope for that.
Do you think if a lot of those people begin to see what you're saying, Alyssa, and this happens, do you think, to me, this next election in 2020 is going to be the true tail test of what you say, because a lot of those people in that middle aisle, which is really independents, moderates, blue dog Democrats, left of center, the people that, you know, and a lot of those people, and I guess the real trickery of this conversation, Alyssa, goes this way, are, you know, Trump is a man whose time has come, a lot of people would say. He seems to be a man up for the challenge of a swamp that is so far deep and wide, it isn't even close to funny. Yet on the other hand, Alyssa, some people would argue back and say he is turning a lot of people off. My concern is, or should it be, I don't know, but I'd like you to talk about it. And then Alana, let's do this. Do you think that Trump, back to a man whose time has come, that he's here for a reason to have these fights with the Cummins of the world and the others that are having and changing those conversations and narratives and dialogues? Or is he turning a lot of those people in the center aisle off? And won't that play out in this next election in a big way? Won't that tell us if what you and Susan put out there right now is correct, Alyssa, versus whether we are in a whole heap of trouble here? Talk to me.
So with Trump, I think there's a mix. I think it's he has awakened a lot of people, and I think he's turned off some people. The only thing is, people act like the world started spinning when Trump got into office. Well, we need to remember that it was Obama who completely broke the country culturally and among the racial divide. That was truly, we had a president who stood up there and would not back police and said Trayvon Martin, if he had a son, it would look like Trayvon Martin. And there's this, that split the country. Mm-hmm. It put a crack in the ice, and then Donald Trump kind of pushed the ice apart. So 2020 is definitely going to be a referendum, not so much on the Democratic candidate, but about President Trump. And the thing is, his rhetoric and his him as a cultural symbol doesn't reflect his policy. And I think that's his biggest problem as far as being a viewed as a divisive figure culturally and among his rhetoric. Because
so you're saying that divisiveness is a cultural disparity and could come back to haunt us.
Correct, because his policy has been rock solid. He's done amazing things, and his rhetoric is so, I'm not saying it's so divisive in the way that either people think it's awesome or people think, or people hate.
So Alyssa, you think he needs to tone it down?
I think he needs to focus more. I think punching back is good when it's calculated, and I think he needs to keep up what he got elected for with as far as culturally. But I do think you need to highlight more of, let the Democrats destroy themselves, because they're doing a great job of it. If you kind of sit back and let the Democrats do your campaigning by being so radically left, I think this was a perfect example when he tweeted the go back to your countries kind of tweet. Nancy Pelosi and AOC were eating each other alive. I think politically and strategically, he should have sat back and let it happen. So I want to see President Trump win in 2020. I think the country absolutely needs it. I think the culture and the rhetoric could be a little bit more calculated, but
okay. All right. Yeah. Ilana, I'm going to guess, just a guess, but if I am to guess, I think you probably second what Alicia puts out there. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong, but I would like to suggest a theory of social change that I have held for many, many years. Society changes in pendulum swings. It goes to the left, it goes to the right, and I don't mean the left and right the way we use it in common, you know, conversation. I think we have gone, as a society, as nearly as far to the left as it's possible to do so in America. And I think that the election of Trump was proof that the pendulum has reached its ultimate point. And I think the elections of 2020 are going to underscore this new direction. You just have to look at the people who turn out to a Trump rally. It's not like Bernie Sanders who draws, 6,000 people or any of the other candidates who draw maybe 6, maybe 7, maybe 10,000 people. Trump organization has to turn away 100 or 150,000 RSVPs to attend his rallies in not in one city, in many cities. This is the groundswell that's coming up, that these are the people who don't respond to polls.
Good point.
These are people who don't want to talk to people who are so obviously antagonistic to the way they believe, to the things that are fundamental to them. And I think we are going to see this mass of humanity who are basically tied to the American values coming out to support Trump in November 2020. And I think we are going to see an overwhelming response.
Ilana, does he have to tone it down, yes or no?
No, I don't think he does. I think he has to do what he's doing. He just did with his tweets. He's shown a spotlight on one of the worst hellholes in this country. And now everybody is talking about
it.
And people are, and something is going to be done about it. And it's more than about time.
Well, it was brilliant in the way that he turned the whole deck of cards onto Elijah Cummings' head. I mean, that's what was brilliant about it. Right.
This is a guy who walks around in his custom tailored suits and ignores the little children in his district who are playing among the garbage and the rats and the hypodermic needles because he doesn't care about them.
Yeah.
He's a person who has enriched himself and become a multimillionaire at their expense.
Yeah. Susan, does he need to tone it down? Yes or no?
No, he's the trailblazing, truth seeking, dragon slaying, non-paid hero, and he doesn't take a dime of his paycheck, sleeps only 4 hours a day, okay? He doesn't need to tone it down or apologize. His numbers are increasing, okay? And he's going to be president again in 2020.
All right, so Susan's saying he's a superhero, basically, is what she's saying there. And interesting, you know, you could hardly get a more interesting conversation than you just had with these three women, really and truly. Susan Price, Ilana Friedman, Alicia Algren. What a privilege it is to have the three of them on and to hear this. The question becomes that we need to leave this conversation with now in some of those lasting thoughts, people, is can the president attract that middle America that we were just talking about with Alicia, Ilana, and Susan on? Can he attract those people? But America is about diversity. America is about beautiful people of all types of walks of life. That's what America is. America is about unique opportunities. It is all, the American dream is alive and well, I tell you. And so I beg you all to fight for the American dream. Please, as you put your head on your pillow tonight, think about the American dream. Think about the grassroots efforts we need to do here, and think about the push here that we need to be having here at America Out Loud. And remember, people, it's time to get involved and get loud.